Hey, we're back. Jacob, you here?
Yeah, that worked.
We're here at, with Rhonda Purdy.
Hey, how are you?
Rhonda, you're our first guest.
Oh my gosh.
We've never had it.
Well, now I'm nervous.
Yeah.
We've had live audiences. We're really popular in the Mime community.
Right, as we talked about.
And your girlfriend is a huge fan of the show.
Oh, she's...
Surprisingly.
Yeah.
Is she one of the 13 followers?
Probably not, actually. I bet... On the outside, she doesn't listen to it.
Yeah, oh, what we were talking about, we do have a Twitter account, everybody, if you have questions. And I know on past shows, I've just said we have a Twitter account and not said what it was.
What it's called.
Because it's not, you'd think it'd be Dyslexics Untied, but that was already taken by somebody.
Really?
Yeah, like my last name was taken. So, like, it's kind of like that, where you go on there and it's too late. There's already an apostle.
And you're like, that's ruined it all.
It's like 12 apostles.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
They're pretty famous, though.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was kind of like that. So we went with Dyslexic Podcast, or I went with. It was
It was an executive decision.
Yeah,
apparently.
But you like, I conjured up the spirit of Jacob to come up with it. So Dyslexic Podcast. So if you're on Twitter, we have 4 followers. We'd love to have you follow us, too. And I promise I won't, like, get crazy with the tweets.
Yeah, it'll be very minimal tweets.
Right.
Mostly sharing podcasts.
Yes, podcasts and, like info that we feel like is not... I think it's more accurate
than
a lot of stuff that you hear about dyslexia. So
at
least what we feel is more accurate, because of course we're not, like, we are dyslexic, but we're not experts.
We're not experts on the topic of dyslexia, which brings us to perhaps Rhonda.
That's why we're here.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, why not talk to an expert?
I don't know if I can go that far.
But you're probably farther than us. So what is your actual title, Rhonda?
The Director of Disability Services at Bellarmine.
Nice.
Yeah. And okay. I've been at, I think I was counting on the way over here, I've been at teaching or learning at 9 universities.
Wow.
And this is the first, you're the first person that I've met who does this.
Oh, wow.
But I would assume that there's one at every university.
Yeah. And it depends on the university. They can structure it how they want. Oftentimes it's thrown in with another role. Could be, if it's a small school, it might be the dean of students is in charge of it. Or if it's a bigger school, they may have a whole department with a different person in charge of, like, learning disabilities, in charge of mobility issues, in charge of hearing impairment. So depending on the size of the school, the structure, it's set up differently.
Okay. And so, Jacob, what was your recollection when you came here as a freshman?
Well, I came here...
Rhonda was here, right?
Well, yeah, we organized a meeting before actually even... officially started here, I think, or even was accepted here. We started with Rhonda to make sure that it would even be possible for me to be able to make it through in, like, an academic lifestyle like this one. And we talked about, it was the first time I'd ever went to a university, and I'd toured a couple of others, and they had never, we always just heard, when you go to other universities, you just hear, we have accommodations. And it's like, well, what exactly am I going to be doing in a day-to-day class life? You know, what is that going to be like? And you know, you don't really have an answer, because they're just like, oh, yeah, we can accommodate you. It's like salesman. It's like, yeah, we got you. Just come on in. It'll be fine.
Yeah, just sign this paper.
Yeah, and you'll be fine. You're dyslexic. We get it. Okay, throw you to, like, treat you like everyone else. It's like, well, not exactly. And Rhonda was the one to be like, well, this is what your class style could be like. These are the opportunities we could give you. Like, you know, we might be able to do class substitutions, which ended up being able to do a decent amount, I feel like, for a accommodated student. We had letters for a while, and it could share. We talked about this in the last podcast. It would say, like, all the accommodation I was able to get, and then you give that to a teacher, and then you could have... For me, it was an opening of a discussion with the teacher. The teacher usually had no idea what the letter meant. I don't know if that's your experience with other students, but they would give them the letter, they would read it, and they'd be like, okay, so do I teach? What do I do?
What
and it's like, it's just, we need to have a separate discussion. I had a really good philosophy professor that, like, every single week would sit down and meet with me and be like, how does this test work for you?
Remember the professor's name yet?
Still can't remember him. I don't know if I don't even know if he's still here. I haven't seen him in a while.
Okay.
And then I had a really great math professor, the one that I took. You ended up switching me into liberal arts math.
Right.
That new, he's a brand new math professor. Can't remember his name either.
And by the way, folks, if you're listening, it's not that Jacob doesn't care about these people. It's that he's dyslexic.
And I can't remember
names. And I love my students, but man, I totally forget their names as soon as I see them. I know, like, I know you and I know your project. I totally forget your name.
Yeah, I'm like, these are just impactful people in my life.
They shaped my life forever.
And I'm like,
that guy.
That one guy that did that, I loved it. But the new math professor would be easier to figure out, but he was awesome as well.
I can figure out all of them. I have copies of your old schedule.
Oh, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, so maybe we can talk about that
detective trail. Dude, you can do shout outs to all our favorite people.
Got all my
that could be a great
here.
Show. Like, people who, like, because there were some people who really impacted me, and I kind of remember some of their names, so we should do that.
And we could go through and be like, hey, if you're out there.
Yeah, if you're out there. I reached out to one of my, when I was in high school and I dropped out.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that? Like, I got a job at a restaurant. It's Taco Mac. Do you know Taco Mac? Do they have theirs here?
Never heard of Taco.
And I was like, I have health insurance. I have a job as a cook. That's all I'm going to get out of life. Like, that's good
for
me. I'm done. Right? So I dropped out of high school in the vice principal, Miss Ferguson. Miss Ferguson, if you're out there, thank you.
Miss Ferguson.
Yeah, it's easy to remember that name.
Yeah.
And then she actually came visited me at work and said, hey, Sean, you're almost done. You're a senior. Let's wrap this up. Let's finish.
That's awesome.
And so I did. I was like, okay, Miss Ferguson. I never liked her before then because I was always in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
I was just a troublemaker.
Does she know?
She knows. Yeah, I found her. Finally, I spoke at a middle school, and some of the teachers were like, you need to find her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. But I was kind of a creep. Like, I creeped on her, trying to find her, you know what I mean? I was, like, sending messages. Real nice messages, but like, hello, Miss Ferguson. I don't know if you remember me. It's who I am.
Yeah.
I want you to know I'm a professor now. Thank you for helping me finish.
Yeah.
It would have been hard to be a professor if I didn't finish high school.
That's so, really great.
But yeah, she found me. She emailed me. And I was like, if you're ever in Louisville, I want to buy you lunch. So
that's great.
That's so
the
nice.
Offer still stands, Miss Ferguson. So
she's
I think she's
there.
Retired in Florida. She's living,
she's
the dream.
She's probably enjoying for her. Herself.
She's like, Sean, after Sean, I retire.
that's the teacher goal. Like, that's
get the dyslexic
they try
kid
to do.
Graduated. Done.
But that was the experience for me. We actually had, like, a path. We had teachers we could work with that I wouldn't have graduated otherwise if it wouldn't have been for some of these math accommodations, different English accommodations with grammar and editing, which is right in my major, which I just wouldn't have made it through if we wouldn't have been able to adapt or if I wouldn't have had help from those specific professors. And that all wouldn't have happened if it wouldn't have been from it being able to have – I don't know if we do that with all the students, I would assume – a lot of students request to be met with and be like, how does this, how can this work with whatever
more
difference
for sure.
they might have.
Yeah, for sure, more and more. And I think that one of the big, there are always students, okay, so the students use standard accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
I have ADHD, I need extra time, distraction, testing environment. And so there are lots like that. But then there are students, I'd say like you, who come in and you really can't do the cookie cutter accommodation approach. And I think that a lot of that, it depends on, number one, the student. And I think that you were just really vocal and active and knew what you needed to learn. And I can say absolutely that not all students come to college like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of them come with that experience of, okay, I had an IEP, here's my IEP team, team.
What does IEP stand for?
Individual Education Plan.
Oh, okay.
So in JCPS, for instance, you can either have a 504 plan or an IEP, and it depends on the type of disability and the severity of the disability. And so it's the team, then, that sits around and makes decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It includes the parents, and then teachers, the counselor. And they make the decisions about the accommodation needs. And, of course, they bring the student in, and the student sits there and tunes them all out, which is what I would do.
Exactly.
And then they're a senior, they graduate, and they say, okay, go into school, and now you have to do all that on your own.
Okay.
And that's a huge jump. And I don't know if you remember
how
that transition was for you.
I was in a very rural high school, and they wanted to put me, I'd been on an IEP in middle school. My mom taught middle school at that same district.
And that helped that your mom
was
a teacher, for sure.
It helped in a way you wouldn't think, though, because when I got into high school, we cut the IEP. Because all it meant was you get put in special ed classes.
Exactly.
So she was like, we're just going to
challenge it in there.
Yeah. Okay. We were like, she was like, we're just going to figure this out without the system that's available at our school. Mm-hmm. Because that's the simple system. You know, it's not, it's a rural high school. It's not,
right.
They didn't have a lot of people that were trained on educating people with learning disabilities. They would just push them to the side. You know, mm-hmm. that's kind of how it worked. And my mom knew that, being an educator in that system. So we worked with, who just happened to be a brand new counselor at that time, just happened to be someone who was fresh and, you know, out of college, worked with her, and she helped get my ACT accommodations. So those are the only ones I ever used in high school, was mm-hmm. to get extra time on the ACT.
Yeah, oh, I blew that.
Yeah, so I could take, finally on the ACT, I could take one portion of the ACT every single day. Mm-hmm. So I took one portion, I had multiple hours to complete it, and then I came back the next day, sometimes like a week later, and I could do the next portion. And I couldn't see them beforehand, obviously, right. but it just, wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, because I think I only did 20% of it.
Exactly.
Like, I just couldn't do it fast enough.
Because I tried it once, obviously. They always make you try to fail, which happened here, too. I mean, that's the right way to do it. Like make sure.
Show me.
Yeah, make sure you can't do it. Grammar and editing, make sure you fail. 45%. Okay, let's try something else. You know, that's, I get that. Right. But yeah, I didn't, my mom just was like, you're not going to be, told the teachers.
Right.
She was like, he's not going to be on an IEP because we have to have him here, not just sitting,
right.
sitting
right.
back. So. How do you, like, whenever there's other students that aren't in the cookie-cutter box, how do you, like, begin to plan these things out? Or you just pick pieces from this part, pick pieces from
this
part? I
talk to them. I mean, I think that is crucial. I have a counseling background, and I think that maybe that's one of the differences in people in roles like mine. For 13 years, I did counseling, you know, individual, family, a lot of intensive counseling. And so I really bring that to this job. And I think that that's something that's helped me tremendously. In my old job, I went to IEP meetings. I worked with students with disabilities, but in a different way. And so when I started doing all, and when I came to Bellarmine, keep in mind too, I worked part-time counselor, part-time disability services coordinator.
Right, that's and when I was there.
Exactly, yeah. That's when you came, and then transitioned into full-time disability services director. But I think that the one thing that's helped me most is the ability to sit down and tune in and listen to the student, because that helps me understand and kind of dig deep, because, like I said before, that student, as a freshman, they come in with their parents, and the parents want to do all the talking, and it's like, I need to get you alone, I need to get you by yourself. And that's what I appreciated most about you, is that you were one of the few students who could say, okay, here's what happens. You really explained it to me, because, as you know, that dyslexia affects everybody a little bit differently. And for you to really know yourself how to explain it, I mean, it's tough to explain, and that's the one thing you said.
That's why this is here. Yeah,
something that was the one frustration you always had is how do I explain this? But you were patient with that, and you helped me understand it. So that was what helped me get around to, okay, this is what we need to do.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was experimental.
Oh, totally.
It was absolutely experimental. And that's what I tell all of my students who don't fit into that cookie cutter is, okay, let's try this. After talking for an hour with them, hearing about their history, looking, of course, at the documentation, which can be helpful, and putting it all together, I tell them, you've never been in college before. So, and not only that, but you have these classes now, but next semester's classes might affect you completely differently. So it's really then making sure that we keep the communication open, so that we can say, okay, is this working? Is this not? And if it's not, let's change it. Accommodations are not written in stone. Let's just tweak it until.
And that was the best part about here, is accommodations aren't written in stone. Did you? So you found then? So on other points of dyslexia, you found that there is people that you can just be like, here's your.
Standard accommodation.
Yeah, here's your standard accommodation.
Like, you get more time for tests.
Pretty
you get,
well. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What is a standard accommodation,
for
a dyslexic person?
Well, again, I hesitate to answer that. That's one. Yeah. I think there are standard accommodations for people with, like, ADHD, but I don't know that they're now,
really?
After these all these years, if there are standard accommodations for dyslexia.
Wow.
I think
Is it a lack of understanding, or is it a versatility, for lack of a better word?
It almost
like
seems spectrum-ish.
Spectrum-ish. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
It is. So I will say, without a doubt, that testing accommodations, at least when the student starts off, are helpful, because it gives them that extra time to slow themselves down, to
For me, it gave me time to breathe. Like, even if I did understand the material, I was like, okay, I have time to look at this over and over if I need to.
Yeah. I wouldn't have time to recheck my answers, you know, right. on certain tests. Like, I barely got through it. I'm like, I hope I did right. Like, I'm sure everyone else got a chance to go through and double check.
Because they had plenty of time in their heads.
They could read faster. They could...
The other thing I think is helpful, and I don't know if you ever use this, Jacob, but for the students to have the isolated testing room versus the distraction reduced. So that means they're in a room by themselves.
Oh, I had those before.
And then I encourage them to read it out loud. Does it make sense, what you're hearing? Hmm. Or the option of using assistive technology, Kurzweil, which reads, we can download the test and it would read it out loud to
them.
Oh,
wow.
Or even beyond that, having a reader if they're more comfortable with that option, which the reader usually would be me. So me going into the room with them and just reading the test question.
Is that hard?
It can be if the topic is not something that I like biology. I would get the test in advance and
have to
read it,
study
and,
it,
and yeah, make sure that I was pronounce the words right.
Mm-hmm. And... Yeah, it absolutely could be difficult. So and again, I don't know that you ever tried
that
option.
Middle school, like, was the earliest I think I ever did that, and then we cut that out of the picture. I did an isolated testing room for grammar and editing.
Okay.
But it just made me really terrified.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me. But I understand totally, because I see tons of people using it.
Right, right. And for you, it certainly changed as you progressed in school. I don't think that you really needed
I think it was the type of classes.
Right.
Sean and I talked about this maybe in our first podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was that I got better, really, or if that my classes became significantly less linear. So I was able to take more classes like Sean's, where it's like, here's your overall goal. You know what I mean? Get to that goal, which is totally my forte.
Right.
Not take this step to get to this step to get to this step, which is an early education, you know, like a freshman and sophomore.
It's higher order learning. So once you got into higher order learning, you were great.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, that's what it's a Bloom's taxonomy and all that. So there's theory for it. There's a reason why I make things open, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like when you first start out, I feel like in college, I don't know if this is really true to college universities, like the freshman level courses, they seem designed to weed people out a lot at a lot of places. Like you go to these huge lecture halls and you go to the, you know, State U, right? You're going to be in a huge lecture hall, and the idea is like, you're not going to be a doctor because you're not going to pass biology. And so there's a few that are like, oh yeah, I'm going to be a doctor, and they ace it. But a lot of those courses are designed to kind of get you out of the system.
Right.
And I think, as you progress with if you have dyslexia, you kind of learn tricks along the way. At least that's how it was for me.
Oh, yours was like totally.
I would learn like, wow, that didn't work. How can I study this time? Or, and how do I do this? One of the things we talked about, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but when you get those multiple choice answer questions,
everything can be right.
And you hear people say, well, dyslexic people don't understand what you're asking. It's like, not really. Like, I know how to, I have to remember how you would read that question.
It's the same way as the spelling.
Because I think people with dyslexia would make the best lawyers. Because we could argue for anything. And that's the problem with multiple choice. I'm like, that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, if there was a snowpocalypse and then it could snow here. You know, like, we're just always figuring out a way around it. And it's a creativity, but it doesn't test well.
Right.
So for Jake, we talked about, like, when I would take a multiple choice question, I wouldn't be like, what's the correct answer? I'd be like, what does the professor think is the correct answer?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I could argue for that or that or that.
What do you think is one of the biggest misperceptions out there about the term dyslexia and people with dyslexia?
Read backwards.
Yeah.
That's definitely the one I get all the time. Because if you could... Here's the simple thing about the theory that dyslexic people read backwards. If that were the case, we just learn how to read backwards.
Right.
And then we could read. You know what I mean? It would be that simple.
Or we would learn Arabic.
Exactly. Or it doesn't matter. Like, I could... The English isn't the only language out there, by the way.
Yeah, there's some languages that write backwards.
Yeah.
Whereas front words for them, we're backwards.
Right. So. And I was like, there'd be way more solutions if it was only just, you read backwards, okay, let's flip-flop.
Here's a mirror.
Yeah.
Done.
You, my accommodations, I must read by mirror.
I wear glasses that are mirrors that flip it. There'd be technology, it'd be all sorts of stuff. And I think it's because it's more complicated that the people get confused. And I get asked to this day, still, whenever I tell people about dyslexia, they're like, oh, read this.
Really? They're
like, I can read it. I mean, I'm not completely illiterate.
I get a lot of kind of shock, like, people are just like, what? You have dyslexia? Because mm-hmm. I guess because I'm a PhD or something.
It almost feels like a microaggression. I hate to use that word.
Yeah.
Because I've always...
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, but you can see that as well in, like, learning differences, which is really interesting. Like, what you're saying. Yeah. Oh, I didn't think that you had dyslexia.
Is there treatment right. for that?
What does that mean?
I get that, too. Like, so you got treatment for it or something? Or, yeah.
Treatment for
so you're different. You're different.
Ask your
now,
doctor.
Right? Yeah. Ask your doctor.
If dyslexic is right for you,
AstraZeneca may be able to help.
Side effects include. There's a lot.
There's a lot.
Just give us. Yeah.
But that was for me backwards reading.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's the shock and treatment.
Right. Well, I always told people because I talked to Sean before, I went through a lot more dyslexic therapy, so to speak, is what they called it. They didn't really have a good word for it, because it's not, they used to call it dyslexic training, mm-hmm. but that makes it sound like you're being trained to have dyslexia, which isn't the case.
Yeah, good luck on that one.
Yeah, and so now they call it dyslexic therapy, or like therapeutic, you know, learning stuff. I don't know, they had a lot of different words for it. Yes. Yeah, a lot of different words.
Probably
for
has
it.
An acronym, some bunch of letters and numbers.
Yeah, perfect for people with dyslexia. Yeah. Perfect for people with dyslexia, name it that. But they would have all different types of solutions and things that I didn't even think applied to me at all. I always called it the, when I describe it to people, I always called it like the trash can of learning disabilities. So like you had all sorts of stuff sitting on the edge of your desk and you're like, this person has this. And then you just topple it in there and you call it dyslexia, but there's a lot of different entities within it. Like mm-hmm. there's a lot of different parts that, and that's kind of a, rougher way to put it, obviously.
Yeah, you could say smorgasbord or something.
Right, but I'd always use trash can. Trash can. I don't know, maybe I'm a little rougher when it comes to that, but...
So do you have, like, your elevator speech for, like, what it is, if somebody asks you what it is?
I call it hieroglyphs. I just say it's, like, if you're looking at Egyptian hieroglyphs in a pyramid.
Yeah, you used to tell me that.
Yeah, exactly, that's what it's like. You just, it's
not
that you...
It's familiar, but...
Right. Yeah. It's not that you don't get its purpose, either. It's not that you look at it and you're like, oh, that's not a language. Mm-hmm. It's that you look at it, you know it's a language, you get bits and pieces of it, but you're like, I have no idea what the entire mm-hmm. thing is trying to say.
Yeah, I explained it last night, and even to my daughter, she was asking me about it, and I was like, well, you know, I may not read as fast as you, I can't spell as good as you, because she already spells better than me, she's 9.
Right.
But I'm very creative. And I can make connections that a lot of people miss, mm-hmm. and I can see things that a lot of people can't see, and so that helps me in a lot of ways. But it's really tough when, especially in a university where creativity isn't always measured, mm-hmm. right? Usually it's like, here's a book, did you memorize it, or can you tell me this?
Right.
And that's tough when it's we did a whole podcast on it. It's not you. It's the measurement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a measuring tool.
The measuring tool just doesn't. It's a linear measurement, and we're 3D thinkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it just doesn't. It's really
and
tough to.
To be fair, like it's not like we. Just to make a note, it's not like we attack people on the linear spectrum or the education system for being linear. It's way easier to teach people on a linear perspective.
And most people are.
And
linear
most people
thinkers.
Statistically so, are on a linear thinker. So it's not like we're like, oh, you're just teaching everyone wrong all the time. For the most part, if you look at us as a factory of education, you're probably the American education system does a pretty good job, I would say, of saying like, here's your smorgasbord, you know, like you just fit, boom, 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 go down the line.
But could you imagine if we were lawyers, if we could be lawyers? Like, there's no way I'd pass a bar exam, but I'd make a freaking good lawyer.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been there too.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that I can do that I just. And I'll never get there because I'm
and I wish there excluded. Could be like pieces, like you could learn like pieces of rocket science. Like I bet it could be really good at like figuring out concepts
look at Elon
for
Musk,
rockets.
Right?
But I don't know the math or anything behind it. But if I could just sit there and think about ways to, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be good at it, but I bet there's pieces of industries that people that have dyslexia would be really good at, but they couldn't do the stuff before it to get to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think universities are changing as technology and AI are going to be more and more a part of it, I think. Yeah. I'm hoping that we'll move up Bloom's taxonomy and start looking for upper level thinking, creativity, mm-hmm. problem solving. Once we can figure out how to measure that, I think we'll see that. But I wanted to, we got a few more minutes left, and I wanted to kind of tie it back to people who are who have dyslexia. Maybe they're in high school. They're thinking about college. I remember talking to you. We did the panel together, mm-hmm. and you were saying how students are becoming more and more, they're becoming their own advocates, mm-hmm. and they're becoming more outspoken and more like, this is what I need. So if you were talking to someone who's a high school student considering the university, what would some ways you would counsel them as a person with dyslexia to come into the system?
Well, I definitely play on that strength. If that's something I noticed that they had already, was this ability to self-advocate, especially if their diagnosis was in that area, because their accommodations, again, may have to change, may have to be tweaked. So that skill that they would have of self-advocacy is going to be their skill that's going to help them the most. So talking with them about, to Sal Bellerman, I would talk to them about the size of the school.
Yeah.
And the availability of their instructors, because honestly, like you know, their relationship with their instructors is going to be what helps them probably get through school.
Yeah, motivation's huge, I mm-hmm. think.
Yeah, because we're going to use that instructor to help us get through that accommodation decision. It's like we did with Stacey Shane, you know, it's like, how can we get around?
How do you make that work?
Grammar and editing's tough. Yeah. How do you do that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the first thing I would really push. Certainly we would look at, again, it's their history. What do you know about yourself that it already works? You start with what already works.
Know thyself.
Know thyself, absolutely.
Got it.
And then I think it's important for any student coming into doing college shopping to then ask me about, well, then what do you guys have available to help me? Mm-hmm. Because we do have some technology. We use, like I said before, we have Kurzweil, we have Learning Ally. Those are both reading software tools so that they can listen to their books. But bigger schools have more, and so I would encourage them to shop around and if they use technology. I don't know how much you used it.
I didn't really use any technology. The only thing I ever remember calling as tech in dyslexia was I had a binder separator, like the see-through colored ones,
right.
And I put it over top of the page because I thought that there was a time where my teachers thought that the white page was causing the confusion because of the reflection of the light off the white page. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but it does give you a headache, but they also thought, for some people,
the glare
bothers headache,
the glare out of me,
But they also, and so that would help a lot because it just calms your eyes, and but they thought that would also be like, maybe that'll help them, you know, read. And I was like, well, no, but it does make looking at the paper a lot more pleasing.
Right.
And in the last couple minutes, so we kind of talked about this before, what would be the process of being, tested, diagnosed for like a learning disability or for dyslexia specifically, or how would you go about
that? What do you need to provide to receive those accommodations?
So they have to be tested by a psychologist.
Okay.
And there are different testing measures specifically to test. It's a whole big category, but it tests reading ability. You know how there are different areas in reading
right.
comprehension, reading speed, reading fluency, sounding out new words. So they'd be tested in the reading, writing areas, and there are specific measures that are used by that psychologist. And that's going to be how you come to the actual diagnosis.
So it's all with reading? Is that how it works? They don't do numbers?
They would look at numbers, writing, memory.
Okay.
All of that. Long-term, short-term memory.
They
throw out a bunch of digits to you and say, okay, now repeat them.
He knows how to do that.
I did that.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
Or words and have you repeat them.
Because I had to do it again before I went to college. So I did it my senior year of high school and they did the whole thing again.
Yeah.
And I actually got pretty good for me at repeating the numbers back to people, but which is really helpful in my job now.
Yeah,
but Sean said he couldn't do it the same.
I was telling Ron I had to look like three times at my phone to find this office. Because it's like B, what is it,
05?
What?
B05A.
See?
Yeah.
I'll forget.
Yeah, you don't know what
B05A.
Just use landmarks.
Right.
Yeah, like I was like, we need a name.
Well, you said it B05A, and I was like, I think that's just her office. So I just went here. I didn't read anything. I was like, I just think that's where Rhonda's office is. Because it's in the basement, so either I'm walking into her office for no reason, or she'll be there.
Well, we talked about, Jacob and I talked, like, I've never been officially diagnosed, or whatever you call it, or discovered.
Yes, that's a positive.
I was thinking, like,
there
is,
you go. That's
what is
a positive
Qui-Gon,
way to
what does
put
Qui-Gon
it.
Say when he meets Anakin for the first time? Like, if he was in if he was in a different system, he would have been discovered or something,
right?
Like,
right.
Raised as a youngling.
You've been discovered.
Yeah, I think that's how England says it. I think I like that's how they say it, because the British, this, I was looking online, like, British are all about dyslexia. Like,
really?
Yeah. I don't know if it's because Richard Branson's from there, and
or maybe they're trying to rule the world.
Really
again,
rich.
So they're just trying to get creative.
Yeah, they're going to get all the dyslexic people on board.
Yeah,
they're
trying to get,
and get all the creatives in there.
Take all their land back. They miss their land.
They miss their globe.
Yeah, that they used to own.
So we'll wrap it up. There's a video that I was a part of it, and it was like the face of disability, and it was by a student with autism, I thought.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. I wanted to shout out to that video.
Yes, and I'm going to, as soon as I can, I'm going to get it onto my Disability Services website.
Okay.
Because it's amazing. You didn't see it.
I didn't see it, no. I'd love to see it.
Maybe we'll throw a link to it on here or something if you want to watch it. But it's a, I thought it was good, and it was neat to see that, yeah.
So. Yeah, it was. It was in an effort just to show that disability doesn't have a look, you know.
Like
it doesn't have a...
Anybody could have one. You just don't know, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, be nice.
Yeah. And dyslexia is not catchy.
You can't...
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's... that was the other one, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
like,
you can't catch
it. Spread that into, like, maybe to my kids or grandkids.
Yeah, it could be... There's ideas that it could be hereditary.
Yeah.
And you don't outgrow it. I mean,
right?
No, that's the other thing. Oh,
misconceptions.
Oh, so you're better now?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Well, yes, but no.
No. One way I explain it is like an operating system. Like most people are born with PC brain.
Right.
And there's a couple Macs out there, and then there's some Linux. Those are like the few, the proud, the Linux.
Yeah.
You know? and it's good that we should all work together, because if something comes up and it disrupts the PC, at least you got the Linux and the Macs still operating, right? So it's neurodiversity is a concept, mm-hmm. And I think it's one way we survive as a species, because we have different ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
Right. So when the linear brain's like, I don't get it, then the autistic brain or the dyslexic brain are like, whoa.
We got this.
I know
what you do. This is what you okay, you go hunt them. I'll tell you how to do it.
Right. We'll write it down for you.
Yeah.
All right, well.
We are out of time, but thank you, Rhonda.
Thank
we
you for opening
it.
Up your office to us. It's a great
this
office
is,
here.
We have
very
shot
welcoming.
Every single podcast in a different location.
Nice.
We did my office twice.
But
did
we
have
split it.
Crystal once, and we had more mimes at the
That's
first
right.
show.
That's right. We had more mimes at the first show than
so
we did at the second show.
All right. Well, guys, thank you for listening. And remember to follow us on Twitter if you do the whole Twitter thing.
It's nerd stuff.
At Dyslexic Podcast. I'm 99% sure that is
that's
right.
What it's called. Spell it
Look
right.
for the fist.
If you can't find it, spell it wrong.
All right. Bye.